Welcome back to the Mel Kay Show. I've been looking around for people that have expertise in areas way beyond myself, but places where people need some answers, need some direction, need some clues. And I'm very excited. My guest today is all of those things and more. I am excited to welcome David Bahnsen to the show. Thank you for joining me, sir.
Well, thank you for having me.
I am very excited. You have written many books that I think are really important. People are right now. I didn't know about, first of all, let alone the level of fake news, but the level of fake financial news and the level of fake employment news. And then after COVID, we had all these different things and people are having a very hard time getting back on track. And you've kind of encompassed many, many things on those in those topics and connecting dots there. So I want to get into that. But first and foremost, please tell my audience a little bit about your background and yourself and who you are.
Well, I appreciate it. I manage money for a living, run a wealth management firm. My wife and I go back and forth every month between Newport Beach, California and New York City. My company has 7 offices. 2 of them are in those 2 cities. And so we are bi-coastal, have 3 kids. And as you said, I've written a few books, care about a lot of these topics very much. And in the course of writing about economics and finance, and applying economics and finance to what I do for a living, it forces me and enables me to deal with a lot of these real life issues in our culture. And it's caused me to get mad about a lot of things. And so when I get mad, I write books.
Well, you know what? That's the best thing you can do. I always say, people don't know where they are, don't know where they're going, they're upset or whatever, take pen to paper, old school style, and figure it out from the inside. And you have done a lot of that heavy lifting for people. The first thing I wanted to ask you, because you, like I said, I didn't know the extent to which there is fake financial news, which I've learned about over the last 3 years. Right now, it does seem like there's a kind of schizophrenia out there in the different outlets that pretend to be the financial news outlets, and many people, they're creating a tremendous amount of anxiety. And again, as many of our other institutions are being undermined, a lot of our financial institutions are as well. Where do you see the financial picture right now from where you stand, which you know, you're as far in as you can get. And people, I think, just need to know a clear picture of exactly where we are and what is going on, because I don't think people have any real idea.
Well, it's funny. With financial news, I don't think there's ever been a time that the business model of the media delivering it was anything other than shock and awe. Nobody has any interest in tuning in to a cable news network or clicking on something on the internet that says everything is fine, nothing to see here. Okay, what gets a lot of clicks and ratings is hype. And that hype can be euphoria. Bitcoin's going to 500,000. The stock market is, it's a new normal for .com, that stuff. Or what really gets ratings is the opposite end of that, which is doom and gloom, you know, some form of predicting financial apocalypse. So things that thread the needle, which is where most financial markets are at most of the time, where most people are living their lives, that middle ground spot doesn't get covered a lot. So you can call it fake news, but I just call it their business model.
Right.
You know, they don't get ratings apart from it. So we view our job as real people managing real money for real people, that we have to cut through the noise and have real objective perspective about the economy, about markets, about investment planning. And I don't think the media is often a very good objective purveyor of information.
No, they're not. And I think that there is the shock and awe factor right now. A lot of people are watching a lot of money being allocated out of this country to multiple war fronts, especially Ukraine, and then a lot of money going towards illegal immigrants all over the country. New York City, where I just left, is giving a tremendous amount of money to that. And I think people have just come upon what I have been saying for about 3 years about the Cloward Piven strategy and about this idea that we cannot keep going down this path and think that there is no end to this. So as you're watching this, frankly, taxpayers, there's no light left and right Republican Democrat in this frustration. People are watching this and thinking, well, where's this money coming from? How much is there? And when does this end? So what as you're seeing all this, these expenditures, I mean, they just put out this insane budget, and this is money people never even thought about even 5-10 years ago. And it's a very confusing time. So from your point of view, or when you have your clients call you and say, what is going on here? What is your take on the actual state of the union as it comes to our financial situation in America?
So I'll do it quickly with two different things. And one of them upsets some people and the other upsets the other. The first thing I'll say is it's totally unsustainable and it's totally reckless. And the amount of government expenditure is insane. And it has a significant effect that it will play out over the years and decades to come. But what the second part is that there's absolutely no way anyone could predict when it breaks. Right. That when I graduated high school 35 years ago, we had less than $1 trillion of national debt. And then it went to $3 trillion and $6 trillion and $10 trillion. And so it has accelerated quickly. And now as it sits here at $34 trillion, $7 trillion of which we owe ourselves, the government, its left pocket owes its right pocket because it's borrowed from its own Social Security and Medicare trust funds. But it owes the public $27 trillion. And that would have been considered totally unsustainable 3 years ago, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 30 years ago. So can they get to $50 trillion? Can they get to $100 trillion? I have no idea. But I do know this. They are incredibly creative at how they kick the can down the road.
Right.
But see, the thing that I want to point out is that it doesn't need to be an apocalypse or end in some form of cats and dogs falling out of the sky tomorrow or in 1 year. It could just be that we're living through exactly what it will be, which is what Japan has gone through for 34 years, a decline of growth. Now, Japan had 0% growth for 34 years. We're still growing a little, but we're growing at half the rate we grew as an economy for 70 years after World War II. Mm. It's unacceptable for a country of our productive capacity to be growing at a declining rate. Why are we growing at a declining rate? Because of excessive government indebtedness, reallocating resources in society to unproductive use. Our right. debt to GDP used to be about 15%. Now it's 22%. That's the problem, is that we are using too much of our resources for servicing debt.
Right. And then there's the other side of this, where there is a model of a global, where it appears that a lot of our money is going towards global governance situations, different UN policies, obviously Agenda 2030, the Sustainable Development Goals, the ESG scores. All this stuff is draining money from us. And as you see, I know a lot of people in the last year or two have become familiar with the World Economic Forum and the COP conferences and all of these things that they're saying. At the same time, as we are transferring money into these global issues, these global emergencies, one after another, be it climate or pandemic or whatever, we're not really putting that much money back into America. And we're not really, it just seems that the model is a post-America model, at least if you look at, a Larry Fink of BlackRock and what he's talking about. I saw his letter came out this week that he tells everyone what they're supposed to do for the next year in order to comply with, I guess, what his vision is. Again, it's all about climate and global issues. And I just don't see that much money being put back into rebuilding our GDP or rebuilding our manufacturing or any of that. And I'm not so sure why and who doesn't think that's important. Your thoughts on that?
Well, I don't believe that I want the federal government putting money into any of this stuff. I don't want them spending money on overseas things that are inappropriate. And I certainly don't want the government spending money on domestic investment. I want them to do tax less and regulate less and allow the economy to productively grow without the government picking the winners and losers. So when they try to pick green energy, when they try to pick ESG, when they try to pick DEI, environmental things, and also when they try to say we're going to favor the manufacturing part of the economy or the service part of the economy, none of it's any of the government's business.
Right.
And I do think that if we're honest about the national debt, We just simply can't even have the conversation without acknowledging that 65% of government spending is going to our own entitlement programs, Social Security, Medicare, Obamacare, food stamps, various forms of public income, transfer payments. So there's all sorts of foreign aid that is being wasted. The entire ESG movement is a fraud. Luckily, it's falling apart. I mean, it's not something that is formidable. The pendulum is shifting the other way. The Larry Finks have substantially thrown in the towel. Vanguard has thrown in the towel. Right. It's failed because it was a failing idea. But the government spending money recklessly and doing so to the detriment of future economic growth, that's the issue at hand.
Yeah. Now, you brought up, and I brought up as well, this situation with throwing in the towel on the ESG score and all of that. But I have heard, and I saw Obama just 2 weeks ago give a speech about something I believe is a lot of times, and I follow a lot of the Lawfare and a lot of that, and they use things that are traditionally mean one thing, and then when they want it to, they'll turn things upside down to mean something else. And I had, 2 years ago, I pointed out that Linda Rothschild was at the Vatican talking about something, a new thing called inclusive capitalism. And then 2 weeks ago, I hear Barack Obama talking about, well, we have to go to inclusive capitalism. And to me, then he's explaining it and it's not capitalism. It sounds exactly like socialism, if you ask me. So now they're talking about, it appears that there's a literal war from within. And this is, I don't think it's fringe anymore. A lot of it's coming out of academia on capitalism itself. And then redefining it. Have you seen this attempt to totally undermine the actual what capitalism is and was and should be, I believe?
Yeah, a lot of it, by the way, I happen to blame the right, because I've never liked the idea that we use the word capitalism to defend free enterprise, to defend a free market, to defend a productive economy. The ism is not merely in capital, which is what I do for a living. I believe in using capital markets as a means to an end, but capital is not the end. Human flourishing is the end. So Marx liked the idea of calling it capitalism as a pejorative, as a way of insulting what those who had believed in a free market economy believed in. But what Obama said isn't new. In academia, they've been doing this for years. About 5 years ago, the Business Roundtable came out and said that they wanted to start advocating for something called stakeholder capitalism, where the fiduciary duty of businesses, of publicly traded companies, would not merely be to their owners, not merely be to their shareholders, but they would also have a nebulous duty of care, a legal responsibility to vendors and employees, suppliers, but also the community around them. So in other words, no duty to anyone. If you have an equal legal duty to everyone, you have no duty to anyone. It's so nebulous and ambiguous. This is a fraud of an idea. Embedded in, for those of us who believe in free market economy, this is something Milton Friedman was writing about 50 years ago. I have a huge responsibility to my employees, if my primary responsibility is to my shareholders, because I can't be in business and give a good return to the owners of my business if all my employees quit. Right. And of course, I have a duty to my suppliers, because if I don't pay my bills, I don't get my supplies and I go out of business. So the market economy already deals with our responsibility to other stakeholders in the business. But legally, as a matter of careful, accurate precision of what we mean when we use the English language. Right. Of course, our primary duty is to our owners, and everybody knows this. And so that's what they're trying to do, redefining some of this. But their agenda is to redefine it so then we can say certain ESG things are just as important as corporate profits and so forth and so on. They're not going to succeed. I don't spend any time worrying about it because it's a self-defeating, foolish philosophy.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, it's funny. Last year, I had talked a lot about at the COP conference, there was the one in Glasgow, actually, right after O'Biden was elected. They were talking about turning the natural asset companies and natural asset classes. And then when you read into what they're actually saying, it was actually Bloomberg and the New York Stock Exchange talking about capturing all of the resources, I guess, on planet Earth, and then turning them into a new kind of stock market where they were the stakeholders of resources on the planet, and the people would go along with that. And I've seen that also implode as well. So one after another. Now, another thing, because we're going to get into work, because the truth of the matter is that I believe that much of what's happened, especially since the advent of COVID, the idea of working in an office and going to work and being an employee has been about by the same people, I believe, that are behind what we've talked about already, kind of looked at as kind of the past. You know, AI is going to take over for you. There's really no hope. All these different people around the country are talking about going as far as universal basic income, which again, I believe is coming from that Marxist, academia talking about that. But there has been a lot of fear as if there's not ingenuity anymore, as if, you know, there's no need for a middle class. You hear some of these people that are on the panels at the World Economic Forum basically being like, I don't know what we're going to do with all these useless people. And you have a new book about the importance of work and and what that is and purpose and all of that. So let's talk a little bit about this push along the same lines as ESG and natural asset class and the government as you know, everything, like kind of like communist China. And the truth about it, about what people should and can be doing to make their lives useful, purposeful, and, you know, fulfilling.
Yeah, a lot of people get upset at me about the message of this book because I think there's a crisis. Everything you just said is where I am, that we ought to be living purposeful and fulfilling lives, and that work is at the heart of that, that I believe work is what God made us to do. One of the problems people get upset with me on is that I don't blame the World Economic Forum for people being lazy and staying home. I also believe that the COVID moment, where a significant part of the population decided that all of a sudden they didn't need to go to work because they were able to do certain things from home, I think that speaks to a crisis of individual responsibility. There's all these bad actors out there in ESG and the World Economic Forum and certain politicians. But I think the idea of people using them as their excuse for their own irresponsibility is the need of the hour. That has to stop. People have got to take responsibility for their own lives. These people are utterly incompetent. The bad folks out there do not have the power, let alone the sophistication, to control our lives. What is holding people down is their decision to surrender their own agency, their own responsibility, their own productive capacity. And at the end of the day, the COVID moment exacerbated trends that were already in place. It put it into fast forward, this idea that people viewed work as a negative, and they held to this sort of romantic Marxian idea that we would do poetry in the morning and go fishing in the afternoon, and some form of activity divorced from real, productive, creative, innovative work. This to me is the need of the hour, and there are no elites that can hold us down when we are actively working and laboring to be really towards the aim of human flourishing.
Yeah, and what came in when they started to realize that people were actually saying, who are these people? They have no authority over us. Who really cares what they say? And why are we being... It actually, during the Build Back Better ad campaign in the beginning of the Great Reset and the COVID and all of that, many eyes were on these people. At first, they liked it, and now they don't like it. So now they have the whole thing about misinformation and disinformation and fact checkers. And what it's really doing is it's telling, I think, the people that they actually think that we're stupid and that we can't discern for ourselves. And as much as they're writing articles, like the New York Times writes an article saying doing your own research is one way to get sucked into propaganda, or, you know, critical thinking is a way to misunderstand and fall into conspiracy theory. I mean, the level to which they're going to try to convince individuals, human beings, that they have to help them understand everything is just like the next level of what you're saying, which is you don't really have to work or take care of yourself or decide your own destiny. Just kind of, you know, get up every day and we'll send you some universal basic income and you can do this. So, you know, at this point, we are at a place where people, like you're saying, have to reinvest in what really matters and go forward with that. Now, is there an ability? I mean, it does seem that these same people, though, are making it very difficult for people to start businesses. I keep seeing new things popping up. Like there was a new on January 1st where you had to, I guess, LLCs and S corps have to start reporting everyone involved and all of their information. And then there's all these FinCEN things. It looks like there's a real data collecting operation going on as well. So what are your thoughts on people starting small businesses now? There seems to not be much encouragement for that.
Well, I would argue that most things that the government does that serve as impediments to starting small businesses and running small businesses profitably are bad things. And I would also argue at the same time that people have to overcome that stuff. Yeah. There's a lot of extra paperwork. There's a lot of BS that goes on, if I can say that.
Yeah.
I run several different LLCs and there's certain reporting requirements and some of them I think are a nuisance and some of them are what they are, but government regulation isn't new. Some of it gets worse. Some of it gets better. All of it is silly. And at the end of the day, if one wants to be in business and run a profitable entity, they overcome those things that get in the way. Yeah. And what I wish people would understand is that the agenda of those doing this is not because they want to end small business. And even if, and let's pretend for sake of argument, it is. Either way, they have to understand that the people they're up against are incompetent. We're so used to focusing on how evil they are that we ignore the fact that they're clueless. They lack the sophistication to hold down people that actually know what they're doing. So I do not view my enemy every day when I get up and go to work as the government. I think they make things harder than they ought to, and that most of what they can do, and this is stuff Thomas Sowell was writing about for years and years, they're a disinterested third party. Friedrich Hayek taught us they lack the knowledge to know how to manage and centrally plan the affairs of an economy, but they also lack the incentives. What we need is for people to feel pain when something goes poorly and to benefit when it goes well. And for the government to try to smooth around the edges of that, it does nobody any good. And this is one of the biggest frustrations I have with the so-called new right and a lot of this populist stuff going on right now is that they are looking for the government to do more in the range of the economy. Well, what we ought to be begging for them to do is just get out of the way.
Yes, I wish that they would. And on that front, a lot of people are also looking for ways to decentralize themselves, personal ways to live their life in a way that they themselves, the government might not be stepping out anytime soon, but there is a movement out there for people to become more self-sufficient, more, you know, just making sure that they have certain things in place and are doing things with their money and their time and their effort and their energy to not to go the opposite direction of this trend towards more government, towards less government. And for you, when you look at that for people, what are some ways that people can actually, you know, reinvest in themselves and also decentralize both financially and in other ways? I know people are very scared. There's been a lot of fear mongering about the banks and the bail-ins and what could happen if your money's in the bank and then all the manipulation with gold or Bitcoin. Like, it's just very confusing to people that do want to decentralize and not be so dependent on the government.
Well, the number one thing people can do to have some element of financial independence and not be dependent on these things is work hard and take control over their own financial affairs.
Hi guys, thank you for watching the show. You know, I'm always telling you to be prepared and expect the unexpected. Well, the Wellness Company has great medical emergency kits to make sure you can do just that. In a world where supply chain vulnerabilities threaten our access to life-saving medication, I highly recommend you get a Wellness Company medical emergency kit. With 8 essential medications, including amoxicillin, Z-Pak, and ivermectin, you can be prepared for any medical emergency that comes your way. They have a medical emergency kit, a contagion kit, an emergency travel kit, and a first aid emergency kit. To support your own health and support the Mel Kay Show, please go to twc.health/MelKay now and use code MelKay for big savings at checkout. Don't wait until it's too late. Take back control of your health today with the Wellness Company Medical Emergency Kit. Because when it comes to your family's well-being, preparedness is key. The Wellness Company, empowering you to face the unexpected with confidence.
People who start their own businesses and run their own business profitably, people who work hard for someone else's business and save money, who spend less than they earn. Let's start with that one.
Yeah.
How's that for complicated financial planning?
Yeah.
Spend less than you earn.
Exactly. Seems pretty simple. And people, I keep telling people there's places we've been in 30 states. I've talked all over the country. There's places all over this country that could use small businesses. There's towns that were completely left behind that you can go in and rejuvenate if you wanted to right now. So that's another way to do that. Now, why did you write this book right now? What made you, because you said you got to a point where you felt like, well, you take your anger and frustration and you write books. So this book right now, what would you like people to get out of it?
Well, I believe that we're living in a time where the pop psychology moment of secular humanism is telling us that work is getting in the way of people's happiness. And I believe we're living in a time where the lack of work is getting in the way of people's happiness. That people need therapy and they need antidepressants and they need medical care and because they are upset and dealing with the stress and anxiety of life. And I think that the way to cope with the stress and anxiety of life is to be productive and have a purpose. And I think God made us with the purpose to work, to get up every day and create something, to produce something. We have our needs met by meeting the needs of others. And we do that by producing goods and services that meet the needs and wants of humanity. That fancy definition I just gave is called one word, work.
Right.
And so work to me is cathartic. It is an antidepressant. It provides people meaning and dignity and self-worth and self-esteem. It is economically beneficial. We need greater productivity, not less productivity. And I, as a man of faith, got upset because I don't think the church is teaching this message. So not only do I have to listen to some total dingbat at the Atlantic tell us how work is a bad thing and people are stressed out, but now I have to listen to pastors say it week in and week out. And none of it is true. Well, yeah. Work is the meaning of life. It's what God put us here on earth to do.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. Now, there is another side to this, which is that they have really implemented this all DEI, this forcing of America to kind of reject meritocracy on a grand scale. And I think that that is one of the most dangerous things, not just in academia, but in corporations and businesses all over the country. And I really, for people like you looking at it from that, I love your point of view on what's going on, but what they are also doing is making it very hard for certain people to get work, let alone, I just looked last week at the freshman year numbers for the top 20 schools, mine being one of them in there. And it is very obvious that they are not even hiding the fact that they are picking and choosing winners and losers, not based on earning it or meritocracy, but something very different. What are your thoughts about these trends?
So there's two things I'll say, and I believe they're both the same thing, but it will help illustrate why I'm so upset about this.
Great.
If you look at the DEI message, it is essentially, as you just said, an anti-meritocratic message. We want companies to make decisions on race, gender, and class, and not on merit. It is the most anti-American and counterproductive to the American ethos message you could make up. But what if on an individual basis, the church or conservatives or people in the, normal middle America, if we say, hey, it doesn't matter if you're on the couch or if you're a corner office lawyer, it's all the same thing, that your work is not part of your identity. Well, that's also anti-meritocratic, in addition to being totally absurd. Someone who's playing video games on their mom's couch till they're 33 years old, smoking pot all day, is not the same thing as a corner office executive who's working and producing and doing things and out inventing and creating and whatnot. Right. The fact of the matter is that all this entire mentality is anti-meritocratic. And the good news about corporate America is they're full of it. They don't believe it for a second. They're buying off the people that are anti-corporate profits. The real enemy of the left is they do not believe in some people achieving higher class mobility. It's a Marxian dogma. And so what do the Fortune 500 companies want more than anything else? It isn't DEI, it's profits. And I have no problem with that. But in order for them to get profits and pacify Bernie Sanders and AOC and Elizabeth Warren, they right. make a deal with them. They say, hey, leave us alone while we go make profits, and we'll throw in DEI to our HR manuals, and we'll throw in ESG to our carbon footprint stuff. It's all BS.
Right.
It's a payoff, but they don't really mean it. And so to me, I am concerned with two people. Those that don't mean their anti-meritocratic message, DEI and all this, and then those who do mean it, who right. actually say absurd things like someone sleeping on the couch all day is the same thing as someone who's out winning gold medals. It isn't right. true.
Or equal outcomes. I spent 20 years right. In Hollywood with, you know, on sets for 18 hours a day, earning your way up from production assistant to wherever you wanted to go. And now it's like, if you take the right, you know, if you fit the right boxes and you do this and that, we'll fast track to you. And these people that have been doing this for 20 years will never work again. And it's really come to that, at least in that industry, in a major way now. But there is something else that I do want to ask you about that I've been talking about too, which is in this corporate DEI model, what's going on there. It does also appear to be that there is a huge, I guess these are NGOs. I don't know. Human Rights Campaign is one of them. There's a bunch of them that they give out arbitrary scores. And then there's like a whole bullying campaign with advertisers and with investors. And this very ugly, Media Matters is one of them. There's many others. We've seen it with Elon Musk recently, but it's happened with many companies where if they do not go along, that there's a public humiliation aspect of this too, which is, I think, kind of new. And a lot of what's going on, I think, with this corporate DEI thing, and then they push it down onto the consumer, is about this public, this new, I don't know, it's like the witches in Salem or something. If you do not want to go along with it, it appears that same media that's very on the side of that destroys people and businesses. Have you seen that as a trend? I've seen it on both sides, I think.
Well, I see it as a trend in the realm of rank virtue signaling. They create these scorecards. Many have walked away from them. Many, once they got pushed back, capitulated. Some are still doing it. I haven't seen any teeth in it, though. No, I haven't seen anyone actually really suffering from the consequences of it. That's largely because the culture is pushed back. The pendulum swung the other way. Everyone's afraid to be the next Anheuser-Busch right now, you know, based on what they tried to do last year. And a lot of these NGO scorecard things, they really reek of what they do in a lot of the state-owned enterprises in China, having kind of a public score about one's own social appropriate behavior. I think we should push back on it. I don't want to take it lightly, but I also don't want to overstate it. These are not real ideologues. These are people doing this purely out of virtue signaling. Our society has fallen in love with the idea of feeling good about feeling bad. Post something on Instagram, announce a scorecard, and all of a sudden you've cured racism and sexism and everything else. So I don't take them very seriously, but I also don't want to take lightly the fact that these are legitimate cultural issues, but you cannot defeat truth. Truth will prevail, and I refuse to become pessimistic about that. I will not give in to the optimism of truth.
Yeah, I agree with you. And the one thing that happened, I guess, yesterday, Sam Bankman-Fried was sentenced to 25 years. And right. after watching after 2008 and everything else, and now suddenly this kid is sentenced to that. I think people didn't expect that. Does that shake up anything? And because he was, you know what, he was an impact investor. He was an angel investor, according to him. And that was like a whole model that they were doing, him and all his, all the people that he aligned with. And they were behind a lot of this stuff, this virtue signaling.
Oh, big time. Big time.
So what are they your thoughts it,
they
on
called
that?
It, they called it effective altruism.
Oh, right.
And when he was first arrested, I wrote a big article at National Review, because it wasn't just him. He was the worst. I mean, right. he lit $8 billion on fire. There's another person in jail right now, Elizabeth Holmes, who started that Theranos, who she was all a big scam artist. And it was about, we're going to save the world. Technically, I don't know that Adam Neumann was ever accused of fraud per se, but he blew up billions of dollars of investor money saying WeWork was going right. to represent a new world consciousness. So you have these high profile people that became billionaires talking about how much they wanted world peace and so forth. So my message to investors is, next time someone tells you that if you give them money, they're doing it for world consciousness, run like the damn wind.
Exactly. I mean, it's just, and you know, these people, and so many people buy it. I don't even know at this point. Now you have three children that you are raising in this crazy world. What are you telling them?
Oh, well, I tell them the truth, and we are pretty good about the fact that we don't try to scare them about things, and we also don't try to lie to them. I don't think it's that complicated. We don't put them in therapy. We tell them when they're wrong. We tell them when they're right, and we let them. They make fun of me. I make fun of them. It's all good.
Well, that's good. I mean, you're lucky because a lot of parents, I think, are very nervous with they send their kids to these colleges. I've had people come on that literally had to have their children deprogrammed. You know, there is a real situation out there. You spoke about churches, which I wish were doing more as well. But there is a real attempt that is similar in my work, at least, of looking at, you know, the youth of revolutions, Marxist revolutions and other revolutions, where they really go after the kids. And there's a entire situation right now of not teaching children things that will help them to achieve what you are saying, which is being entrepreneurs, being productive, being creative. They've changed the model to be all about emotions and social emotional learning and all of this stuff. And then when people do push back, oftentimes they are the problem, or at least that's what's happening. So in terms of that, it's also, I think, what would you say to parents out there that are saying, you know, my kids are, you know, not learning things that are going to empower them in the future. I mean, I always say to people, are you sure you want to go pay for your kid to go to college, to come back a Marxist communist? But who knows? So are you seeing the threat to education, and how do we stop that or stem that?
Yeah, it's a little hard because I think most of the time when parents complain about what's happening at university, I don't think they realize it's already too late, because most of the bad that has gone on happened from K through 12.
Yeah.
Now, you can do a lot of good from K through 12 and then have a university undo it. But usually if they got K through 12 right, they go into university with some form of worldview, some form of foundation, and a little defense, a philosophical defense against the nonsense they might learn at university. I understand that not every parent is in a position to afford private school for their kids. I'm a big fan of Christian school, of charter school, of homeschool, private school. My kids were never in a public school where they would be programmed according to John Dewey, secular humanism, and the moral relativism of the day, and the biological confusion about what a boy is and what a girl is, and all of this sort of, as you call, social learning, this sort of therapeutic approach to child development. I didn't have my kids exposed to that K through 12, but I do want to be very sensitive to the fact that, you know, we are in a position to afford that. Not everyone is. Yet we need to advocate for school choice, advocate for opportunity so people don't have to have their kids programmed in the K through 12 system the wrong way. And then maybe they'll be prepared for something at university level that's different. Maybe they won't. I certainly agree, though. I think the more or less, parents that are paying $250,000 for their kids to go party and be taught all the things that they didn't want their kids to ever have to hear for 4 years, some form of guilt over what mom and dad have done and who mom and dad are. I think those parents are suckers.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, last thing I want to talk about is personal responsibility and individual responsibility. Right now, I believe that there is that the best way that we can fix this country, at least the direction we seem to be going in, is for people to take action in the, wherever they can in their sphere of influence and in their local community, and be very, educated about what they can and cannot do. I don't think people know much about civics, know much about local responsibility, local action. I do know that there's a lot of people that are watching our country and feel that there's nothing they can do. And they're not feeling like there's like a learned helplessness out there. I meet people all over the country that are like, well, what can I do? You know, this is all in DC. This is there. And you talk a lot. You wrote a whole book about responsibility. So right now, I just wanted, before we go, for you to talk a little bit about what people can be doing in their own lives to empower themselves and to stop feeling. So I do believe that there's a Bezmenov level demoralization campaign coming out of coming from all angles at the people. And I just keep telling people, if you're demoralized and you feel helpless and you feel like, you know, there's no hope, then you're right. And I don't agree with that.
That's exactly right. In other words, your point is the key one here. Demoralization is a self-fulfilling prophecy. It takes a willing, complicit party to become demoralized. Fighting against a mentality of victimhood is the burden of the person. You have agency. And this includes times where you really are a victim. Sometimes right. There are things that are unjust that happen to us because of the government, because of a relationship, because of our upbringing, because of a business deal. Bad things happen. But victimhood is about giving into that and letting it own you. And I believe in this crisis of responsibility, the right has decided that everything that goes wrong in society is the government's fault. And the left has decided that everything that goes wrong in society's fault is business's fault or some rich white guy's fault or something to that. Everyone's picking the person they want to blame. And what I advocate in the first book I wrote, Crisis of Responsibility, I have a whole chapter dedicated to what people can do individually and a whole chapter dedicated to what we can do systemically, policy. But the individual part that you're asking about all comes down to us avoiding the mentality of giving into demoralization, giving into victimhood, and recognizing we do have agency. There are ways that we overcome this. It starts with strength, with conviction, with fortitude, with purpose. And yes, bringing it back to my newest book, it starts with work. They cannot get you if you continue to work hard. You overcome those things that hold you down. And that is the greatest mechanism for overcoming a poverty of spirit that's ever been invented.
Wow, that is so great. I love your work. And there's not many voices like you out there right now that are just calling it like it is and telling people it is up to you, literally, to choose the path for yourself and take responsibility for where you are and what you're doing. I think your books are incredible. If you could tell my audience where to find you, where to follow you, and where to get your books, I'd really appreciate it. And we'll put all the links below as well.
Well, I appreciate that. I'd love to be on with you again. It's been a great conversation. Fulltimebook.com is my newest book website. And from that website, it has the links to other aspects of who I am, what I'm doing, what we're about. But fulltimebook.com is a great way to start, easy website to remember. And a lot of this message is found there, this ethos of individual responsibility.
Great. I think it's so great. And I'd love to have you back. And the more voices like you out there that are empowering people to empower themselves, which is what is being lost in this, the better. So thank you so much for being here. And I look forward to speaking to you again. Really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you, sir. We are right now in $34 trillion worth of debt. We have geopolitical chaos everywhere. The central bank digital currency is looming. The BRICS nations have expanded beyond Saudi Arabia and continue to expand. And all I know is that many experts keep telling me that gold and silver is the best way to hedge against inflation and to protect your savings going forward. Did you know you can convert your 401k and IRA into physical gold and silver today? It can be shipped direct to your door or stored in a secure location. So go to our partners page at themelkshow.com, fill out the form, and someone from Beverly Hills Precious Metals will get in touch with you right away to help you figure out the best course for you and your family ahead. Stay secure, stay safe, and prepare now. It's that time of year again. People are getting sick. They're getting the flu. They're getting the cold. They're getting all different kinds of things. And I have always been very grateful for my friendship with Dr. Zelenko, Dr. Z. And though he's not with us anymore and I miss him every day, he has left behind the best remedy to me for anything that ails you. And that is Z-Stack from Dr. Zelenko. There's Z-Flu, Z-Stack, and Z-Kids. There's also many other products there. It's all about naturally boosting your immune health and fighting anything that comes your way. Dr. Zelenko was ahead of his time. He is out there fighting for us still to this day, and he's left behind the best gift. The gift is your health. So go to MelKDrZ.com, or you can go to my partner's page at themelkshow.com, click Dr. Z or Z-Stack. Better health for us all awaits. Thank you, Dr. Zelenko.